The 260 Dugout Podcast. Welcome to your destination for all things baseball in the Summit City. The 260 Dugout Podcast, presented by the Old Fort Baseball Company. From Little League to Major League Baseball, it's time to go inside the dugout. Here's your host, DC Hendricks.
Welcome in. This is the 260 Dugout Podcast. I am your host, DC Hendricks. Special shout out to our sponsor, Old Fort Baseball Company, and our good buddy, Logan Weenie, for making this podcast possible. Very excited for this episode, but before we get started, as always, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review Apple, Google Play, Spotify, and everywhere podcasts are available. Make us one of your favorites by subscribing. And while you're on Apple, go ahead and scroll on down, click write a review, and let us know what you are thinking of this show. So this week's edition, we are out here at Parkview Field. My third interview out here at Parkview Field, but this is the one I've been waiting on. Been wanting to get this one for a while, but this guy's busy, folks. He's got a lot going on, and we are lucky to have him here today as we are, I think, the last home game of the 2025 season. But we're looking ahead already. We're wrapping this one up, and we're looking ahead to 2026 because more great things are coming. We are sitting here with the team president of the Fort Wayne Tin Caps, Mr. Mike Nutter. Mike, thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. It's so great to be with you. And let's make one thing clear from the jump. Of all the interviews and podcasts you've done for this awesome dugout show, I am by far the worst baseball player that you've interviewed. So I know my role. I'm in charge of the cold beer and the good weather.
Yeah, I guess we could say you were technically the worst baseball player of the group, but your love for baseball and your passion for it, you know, it spreads throughout the city of the 260, so it's more than enough reason to bring you on. So before we even get to the Tin Caps or anything like that, you know, I always like going back to the early days because I feel like anyone that works in baseball fell in love for it and remember that moment. They fell in love with it and knew, I know I have a future in this. I just need to figure out what my position is going to be for the game of baseball. So my question for you to even start off, when did you fall in love with the game of baseball and know that, hey, I want to make this a career and work in baseball every day?
You know, like a lot of kids, I just loved playing coming up. I'm an old Northwest Ohio kid. I was born in Akron. My dad was in sales, so we lived all over. And I got the bug in little old Napoleon, Ohio. Played T-ball and all the little league stuff, and then in Ohio it's a little different where we played Pony League and Acme and stuff. Yeah. And I loved it. I was a good ball player. I wasn't great. It's not one of those deals, the older I get, the better I was. I was an all-star. I was a lot better defender than a hitter, but I loved it. But you know, DC, it turned into one of those things. I had an incredible fear of failure in my life. And so it was paralyzing at times of like, I don't know if I should go out. I don't know if I'm going to make the team. So maybe this resonates with somebody listening out there. It can be tough. And that was all pre-social media stuff, right? And right. So I was able to make all the teams, but it just became, I remember going to my dad one day and saying, "Man, I don't want to play anymore." And he said, "Well, if you don't want to play, then don't go out. But, like, you're not doing it for me. Like, I want you to play because you love it." And so nothing but great memories. Played through the beginning of high school. Then we moved to California. A little different level of competition out there. And just didn't. And so with that fear of failure, I told my parents, you know, I'm not going to try out for baseball. And they didn't push back. They were incredibly supportive. But they both said, "You've made every team you've been on. You've been a good player on every team. Why had such that fear of failure?" I said, "I'm going to go out for the golf team in California. It's at the same time." And they said, "Well, that's fine. And you're a good golfer, but you're a lot better at the other one." But for me, it was that fear of failure. Hey, if I didn't make the golf team,
right,
fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I didn't, you know, and then I made that and played it for 4 years. And so that's cool. In hindsight, I do wish at that big factory of a school out in Northern California where I went to school with two big leaguers. Randy Wynn played like 15 years in the big leagues, yeah. Got traded even up for Lou Piniella. Randy's a buddy of mine.
Wow.
And so I'm not suggesting I would have even made it or I would have been a contributor, but looking back,
yeah,
I tried to do it with my son playing of like, hey, we got to conquer those fears because, again, we know in this sport, as cliche as it is, you're going to fail 6-7 out of 10 times. Mm-hmm. And so put yourself out there, and it's okay if you don't make a team or you don't have it go your way.
Absolutely, yeah. So it sounds like pretty much around high school you started realizing might have to change things up a little bit. So when did – so obviously you didn't just start off as a team president, I assume. No. So how did things – how did you even get into – because this goes back to, you know, I remember, and I think you worked at a place before the Wizards even.
Oh, yeah.
So go back to even before the Wizards, how you even got started in baseball.
Absolutely. So my dad moved all over the country. My mom was a teacher. And so they ended up in the Chicago suburbs. I talked about the Bay Area of California before. Mm-hmm. We lived out there on the baseball side. When Canseco, McGuire, and Weiss won those three Rookie of the Years in a row for the A's in the early 90s, we were season ticket holders, late 80s, early 90s. Canseco used to get a lot of speeding tickets in my town of Danville, California. And so a cool place to grow up. Then they moved to Dallas, Texas. I literally spent two nights in that house. Mm. Told my dad, I'm like, this is pretty cool. He goes, good, we're moving. And it was like, whoa. And he was in corporate America and that kind of thing. And then the Chicago suburbs. My parents saw it in me maybe before I was mature enough to see it. And we went to a game with the Kane County Cougars in the minor leagues. And I thought, man, it'd be cool to work here. But I was still living out in Northern California having a blast. Yep. And then the next year, my mom called and said, remember that team? And I said, yeah, that was pretty cool. She goes, good, you start on May 1st, you know, whatever the date was way back then. And I said, excuse me? And she said, it's time to get serious. And so four summers of college, worked for the Kane County Cougars, learned a ton, had a blast. Six of us ended up becoming GMs from my time in Kane County. So that says a lot more about them and their development of people off the field.
Yeah.
A year in Florida, we ran the spring training for the Florida Marlins, worked for a team called the Brevard County Manatees. I'm now old enough that I've worked for a team that's gone under. And then 3 years in Nashville, Tennessee, of all our stops, that was my favorite city I lived in. Just the entertainment, the weather, the pro sports, the college sports was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't afford to live within like an hour of Nashville now from everything I've heard. And then it's now been 26 years in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Wow.
I thought I was coming here for a year or two. God's plan's always been better, but I met my wife. We have two kids, 20 and 21 years old. And here we are already. I spent 9 years with the Wizards, and this is year like 17 downtown. And so Fort Wayne is home. I'm not from here, but it's home. And hopefully this is the last place I ever work.
I mean, look, it's definitely home because you said you've worked in Fort Wayne 25, 26 years. I'm 35.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah.
If anybody, you know, I'm not trying to, like, give any age or anything like that, but I'm just saying if anybody, you know, you have just as much say in 260 baseball as I do at this point. So I want to go back to the Wizards because I remember as a youngster going to Wizards games, and I think it was with Wayndale Elementary. I think we had
it.
I think it was
reading
one
program. And
yes.
Stuff. That's awesome.
Yeah, so
we did
I remember.
More with cinder block out there than any other stadium I've ever been in. But I spent 9 years there and loved every day of it. And 1 year as the assistant, and then the next eight as the GM, and learned a ton, and that set us up for success here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, you know, when people think of the Wizards, you know, and I definitely want to go back for you in those days because I was so young. Like, I really – my memories were just going to the game. Like,
yeah.
I can't tell a specific story. Like, oh, I remember when this happened. But for you, I know you got all kinds of stories. So what are some of your favorite stories in your early days adjusting to Fort Wayne baseball?
So I moved here in October of 99 from Nashville.
Yeah.
And it was like – okay, we're the Wizards. I remember coming up to a game with Dave Lorenzen on our staff. We went to a Comets game. And I was like, my goodness, there had to be 8,000 or 10,000 people in the jungle that night. I didn't grow up around hockey, so, I mean, I had no clue.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, this is unbelievable. And I thought, if they can draw this well for minor league hockey, it should be a great baseball town. I mean, I had no idea that it is, and it was then and is now. And right away, I remember, like, okay, so – with the Wizards, you know, where's the mascot? And they showed me Dinger the Dragon. And I said, it's a dragon? And they're like, well, the other guy was Wayne and he scared all the kids, you know? And so it's like, wait a minute, were the Wizards? And they're like, yeah, this is his lovable dragon buddy, Dinger. And we still bring Dinger and Wayne out on our throwback Wizards nights each year. And then we had some great players come through here. My first full season in town was 2000. And a young Jake Peavy, a year out of high school, was our ace of our team. And we probably had the best team. We had a guy that year that pitched in the big leagues, J.J. Trujillo, still has the Midwest League record for saves at 42. Nobody's ever going to touch that.
Yeah.
For minor leagues?
Yeah, that's
nobody's
tough.
Ever going to touch that. And so we had some stuff. And then a lot of guys over the years – my old buddy, former Chicago Cub, Doug DeCenzo, was our manager to end the last couple years there and then the first one here. So him and I got to see the perspective together. There had to be a summer at the Wizards with 70 home games that Doug and I ate at Casa on Parnell by the Coliseum 55 times maybe that year for lunch. That was his favorite. Matt Latos pitched in both venues. And then I'll always remember one of our local guys that we all love, a young Jared Parker coming into the castle, either the final game or the second to last game ever. And I remember DeCenzo going out there saying to the umpire, I don't care if this kid's local. He's too good. You don't need to give him those calls outside. You know, like, don't get caught up. We're trying to win this game. And so we never won a title over there. We made some playoffs. We won a title here in the first year. Yep. Haven't gotten another one since, but we've been in the finals three times. And obviously this year on the field, we weren't as good, so it won't happen this year. But here's hoping next year will be our year.
Yeah, so, like, I don't remember. So I can't compare the success level from the Wizards to 10 Caps because, like I said, I was so young. So, like, I don't remember the crowds or the interaction or anything like that. But so talk a little bit about the success difference from the Wizards to 10 Caps. What do you think was the indicator of why this program has been so successful in Fort Wayne?
So great question. You know, I've never criticized my time over there. We had a blast. We did the best we could. But a really good year over there was 220,000 fans or something like that. The first year they had in 93, long before I got to town, was the best year. And then for 16 straight years, the attendance declined. And so, again, I'm not here to revisit history or any of that stuff, but there was all this, we don't need the stadium and all that kind of stuff. And I understand that. We're a conservative market.
Yeah.
And at the time, downtown wasn't what it is now. And so some city leaders, Graham Richard is the old mayor, but then a lot of business people said, no, I think this can help a shot in the arm for downtown. And so it happened, and we've drawn as high as 6,000 a game downtown. This year we're wrapping up a year where Mother Nature was not our friend this year.
No, not at all.
But we're going to be at 5,100 a game or something like that over 66 games. So, again, another great year downtown. And so different. I was actually in the camp of, I remember telling our owner, I just think maybe we should keep the same name. It was long before we identified Tin Caps, or we can talk about some of the other finalists, the Octane and Crab Apples and all this other stuff. But it was like, and he said, well, why? And I said, I had seen throughout the country, not as much in Fort Wayne, although there was a little bit with arena football, of people that didn't have the best reputation and didn't pay their bills, and the next year they just call themselves something different, but you're like, it's all the same people.
Right.
You know, and so he said, I understand, and he said, you guys have worked hard to be a good brand as the Wizards, but you got to understand, we're going to go downtown and just change everything. And I mean, I believed that. I thought that. But in my wildest dreams, it wouldn't have been this good or this big and that kind of stuff. So here we are all these years later. You and I are sitting on it on the morning of the final, afternoon of the final game of the season. And the place looks as great as ever. The field looks absolutely unbelievable. Shout out to my man Keith Winter. He's retiring after the game tonight. Yep. But it's been just something that it's been a labor of love for a lot of us. And all these years later, we're still doing our thing downtown.
So I know, me knowing you personally, I know you're not really a guy that, like, collects awards and, like, sets them in their office or anything like that. But, like, you know, as we are sitting here today, I do have to say, for this to be a minor league baseball field, definitely the awards are definitely warranted and well-deserved. And, you know, I know you won't take full credit of that. Like, you just mentioned Keith Winter, who is definitely going to be missed. You mentioned him on Talking Sports the other day, and I didn't even realize that he was retiring.
Yeah.
So, like, people like that. But, like, talk about, you know, your relationships that you've built with the Fort Wayne 10 Caps that, you know, because I know you treasure all your relationships within the 10 Caps organization.
No doubt. Well, Keith joined us in 2010. And so, you know, several of the crew, Dave Lorenz, Brian Shacko, Michael Limmer, Brent Herring, Jared Parcell, we've all been together since the Wizards. And so in this industry, especially back then, there was a lot more of turnover and you got to move here to move up in responsibility and you got to go here and you got to do this. And we've tried, it's cliche, everybody talks about the culture, but we've tried to create that culture where, like, no, I'm not going to chase. We're high A. We play at the high A level. There's low A, high A, double A, triple A in the big leagues, as you know, but for our listeners, and it's like, Dave Lorenz that just walked by, the guy that I said I shared a moving van with 26 years ago, he got offered the job as a double A GM. He's one of our VPs here. He turned it down because he felt like Fort Wayne and the fan support and the advertising and stuff would be better than him taking a double A GM job. There's only 30 of those for here. And so we've gotten an incredible amount of awards. It's awesome. I always deflect to the group and not me personally, but it's been really, really cool. Our owner likes to tell people that he told Brian Shacko, who's our VP of finance, and I back in the day, well, these are the numbers we're going to do, and neither of us believed him. Mm-hmm. You know, because we just, you can only go off your own perspective. And where I was in Nashville, Tennessee, we were AAA for the White Sox and Pirates the years I was there, and we drew really, really well. But until you saw it here, and then again, not to revisit all that, but people were so against the stadium, and then they were so against the name.
I do remember that.
And it's like, hey, man, my last name is Nutter. I've heard name jokes my entire life. So you can say tin caps and potheads and all this stuff, but, like, we're going to try and do our thing, and so far, so good.
Oh, absolutely. And so you talked about, you know, you guys being high A. And so, you know, I think Jim Shovlin's asked you a couple of times because we get texts every week. I think it's even the same person, to be completely honest with you. But, like, how do you respond to people? So you mentioned you guys won the championship the first year. How do you respond to people that, you know, are just consider if it's not a winning team, if you're not winning every year, then it's a failure? How do you respond to people that have that kind of attitude? And what is your response to people that just, because obviously that's not really in your control, right? Like, you don't control that. You don't control the product, the team that you have. So how do you respond to people that say that?
I'm glad you asked. And it's a legitimate topic, and it comes up a lot with the Padres. First off, we love working with the Padres. We've had a lot of big league talent come through here. Tatis and Merrill and Trey Turner, and the list goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. We have zero control over it. And I don't say that of like, hey, don't talk to me about it, but like, you can talk to me about it, but we have no control over the on-field product. So for us, it's the entertainment, the theme nights, the food, the fireworks, the drone shows and stuff we're looking at for next year and things like that, where it's like, that's what we can try and put our emphasis towards. Let's talk about the Padres. Okay, 230 big league guys over the years, Wizards and Tin Caps, some legit major league stars and superstars. AJ Preller trades as many people or more than any other GM in his position. Mm-hmm. You can tell from my tone, I'm not criticizing. AJ and I are friendly, however you want to say it.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to do his thing because last year, if they beat the Dodgers, I might be sitting here doing this interview with a really fancy World Series championship ring on, you know, and it didn't go that way.
Yes.
But it got close. And last year they traded Homer Bush and they traded Dylan Lesko and a bunch of other guys. Mm-hmm. But they got Tanner Scott and they got these guys, Jason Adam, that got them a game away from beating the Dodgers. Yep. And so this year again, the trade deadline week around here is wild because we have nothing to do with it. And I'm on X and Instagram reading the rumors just like everybody else. And so have our players. And and I think the Padres traded 12 or 14 guys throughout their minor league system. And they picked up two superstar hitters from the Orioles in O'Hearn and Laureano.
Yep.
Our guy, Leo, that we loved and a fan, love, present tense, but like fan favorite, 18-year-old kid, biggest prospect in the league. He gets traded for Mason Miller, the all-star closer from Shevlin's A's. And so Leo grabs his gear, drives in that day, cleans out his locker. It was emotional for everybody. Drives straight to Lansing, and he's in the lineup that night.
That's crazy.
He's since been promoted to AA Midland, Texas. He's the youngest player in AA. Mm-hmm. So although he's not in the Padres system anymore, he's a tin cap for life and a guy that we're cheering for. And so we don't control the on-field product. The other thing that we hear from people is, I don't like, we used to be low A baseball. Mm-hmm. Major League Baseball shuffled the deck post-COVID. And I'll hear from people, well, I don't think the game in high A is good enough. Okay, like, fine. I'm not sure. I don't mean this arrogantly. I'm not sure they could tell the difference between a high A game if a double A game took place
right.
here tonight.
Right.
Or yeah, and it was the double A Padres from San Antonio and the double A Reds from Chattanooga.
Right.
I'm not sure they could tell.
Right.
But again, I'm not here to pick fights with people. And it's like, well, I'm not going to come to your games till you're either winning or till you're double A. Okay, then you might not come for a while. Like, we hope we're winning next year. And then for the level, I don't know what Major League Baseball is going to do. The current agreement's up in 2030.
Yeah.
This ballpark is built to AA standards today. It wouldn't take much to get it to AAA standards. We don't say that to say to people, hey, we're going to be AA. I'm not saying that. I'm saying if Major League Baseball shuffled the deck again and said we're going to redo some things, again, I'm not predicting that. I'm not projecting that. But if they did it, you would have to think if there's a Midwestern AA thing, this beauty would be in the mix, in the conversation. Yep.
100%. That's a great response. I know it's good that it's coming from you, because when people like me say it, they're just like, oh,
they don't believe. They don't believe me either.
No, you know? Of course.
And I had somebody stop me last night as we're filming this. It was the second to last game of the year, and our fans are passionate. There's a reason Fort Wayne, Indiana has been named the top minor league city before in the entire country.
Yep.
And a fan looked at me last night and they said, the Padres did it to us again. And I said, listen, I understand that, right? Like, you're a paying customer. You can have that opinion. And I get it.
Yeah.
We're not very good right now on the field. Again, I'm not trashing guys. The effort's there. But it's like you trade a bunch. You promote a bunch of worthy people to double A. And it's like, you know, they've adapted the Cubs line. Wait till next year, you know, and that kind of thing. But it's like, hey, like, the Padres sent Michael King in here the other day. They sent Yu Darvish in here last year. They sent Blake Snell in here. Mm-hmm. We were in the conversation to have a Jackson Merrill appearance. Tonight's his bobblehead night on the night you and I are recording this.
Yeah.
There was a chance he was going to come in here in his rehab and stuff like that. So, again, hopefully it lines up to be better on the field next year.
Yep.
I can't control it. I can just tell him how much we want a winner, how much our fans want a winner.
Yep.
And there was 7,000 people cheering last night. We came up short again on the field, but the fans were into it, and we're going to do that one more time this year.
Absolutely. So one way that I know that you, you know, try to make, because that's one thing the Tin Caps do and have always done from my remembrance, is they make that, it's the atmosphere. It's a vibe, as, you know, the young people say, is, you know, the vibe that you create in the stadium with all the theme nights and all of that stuff. So for the audience, you know, that may not be aware, you know, because I know you have a group of people that all come together to come up with the theme nights and the appearances. So how does that process go?
Michael Limmer's been with us a long time. He's our VP of marketing. And then Morgan Olson and Tony Displains and the very good Chris Darby, the great marketing department, just comes up. There's a little bit of, again, no negative here, no blaming, but we got a long format behind the curtain. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to get it approved by Major League Baseball. They're great. They want us to do great promotions.
Yeah.
Some stuff you can use, the licensed stuff. Earlier this homestand on Friday night, we had a Harry Potter night. Players are wearing the real Harry Potter licensed stuff from the studio.
Wow.
You can do the clips. You can do the trivia stuff. Back in the day, you couldn't do that, so you had to call it Wizards and Wands Night and kind of I could reference on Chevy. Well, there's a movie that had like five or six parts, and, you know, and so Major League Baseball wants us to do the stuff, and so you get together some of the pop culture stuff. You look at the Manzanas Luchadoras. I think it's our third or fourth year doing it. It took off this year. We switched it to the neon yellow jersey and hat.
Yep.
I'd be able to see you all the way across the stadium if you're wearing it. But, like, people just jumped onto it. We try not to change stuff all the time because then it can look like a money grab and that kind of stuff. So we've retired at the end of this year the Hoosier State Tenderloins. It was a cool 3-year run with it, but Limmer and the crew are working on a new one for next year that we might wear once a week or to constantly just change stuff up and do stuff. What we don't want to do, DC, is to do it to check a box.
Yeah.
And so for years, I think I can say it. Well, I'm going to say it, so I hope I can say it. For years, we have been talking to the Native American community and some folks a little further south from us. Mm-hmm. For years, we've been talking to the Black or African American community about what do tributes look like in those demographics. And we continue to go back. And when we talk to community leaders and civic leaders and active people, they say, when you guys get this, it's going to be right. It's going to be done right. Mm-hmm. Don't do it to check a box. You know, at the old stadium at the Wizards, we played a couple games as the Indianapolis Clowns, mm-hmm. The Fort Wayne Clowns. We attribute to Indy down the road. Hank Aaron's first team. I didn't even know that when I moved to town and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We had a blast with it. But truthfully, if I'm being self-critical, it was a little check the box and let's do that.
Right.
And
right.
So now we get a lot more representation of all races and demographics out here. And Limmer's so good, and it sounds cliche, but intentional, that when the day comes for those, I believe we're going to do it, and we're going to do it on a 9 out of 10 or a 10 out of 10 level where it's not just like, well, what was that? Yeah. Like, they kind of said this, but I didn't really notice anything different. And so the Luchadoras this year, we brought in the low riders and the stuff with the hydraulics out in the outfield and cars are bouncing around and the fans are coming up and it's like, how did you guys keep doing this? And it's like, because sometimes a couple years of planning has gone in and I'm not always the most patient guy. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, we got enough. Let's go. Let's do it. You know, and it's like, hang on. Patience, boss. Like, just chill out and give us another few months for next cycle. It'll be really good.
Yeah, absolutely. Love the theme nights, and you do a great job with it for all age groups. There's stuff for kids with the Bluey and Daniel Tiger you did this year, Clifford, and all the 80s nights that I know you enjoy going back with the mullet days of, yes. Of Mike Nutter. But in addition to all this, too, and this is a discussion that I wanted to bring up, too, before we get out of here, is in addition to all this that you do with the Tin Caps, you are also a father.
Yeah.
And I've had kids, you know, travel through here playing travel baseball, playing Little League and all that fun stuff. So I believe your dad days of baseball is over, I believe. So, like, I guess we can recap your experience because, like, as you see, my son's here.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of getting into that, you know, pre-high school range of dealing with the travel ball situation and all that stuff. So from your perspective, how was that for you as a dad?
It was unbelievable. My son and I probably came through it closer than we were when we started. And so that was the goal. Maybe because I've worked for a minor league team for 30 years, I didn't have, dare I say, delusions. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with aspirations of, like, he was going to be out on this field or something like that. Like, it was always about learning teamwork and learning, you know, you got to wait your turn. I mean, he came through the factory that was Homestead. And in his class, you're behind Colpine and Matheson and, you know, professional guys and stuff. And it's like, you got to wait your turn. You got to wait your turn. And so you're teaching them the gym doesn't lie and the hard work pays off and stuff. But we started in the T-ball at the Y, you know, and went through prep league and did all kinds of stuff. And we did do the travel route and we controlled it ourselves a little bit. And had a blast and got through it and just had a blast. And then his career ended when he was with a Homestead team that lost in the regional final. One more and they could have gone to semi-state. And it was Noblesville. And I think it ended 3-2 in a pitcher's duel with some pitchers that are still playing in college and stuff. And so my point is, man, we had a blast. And my favorite thing, he was a really, really, really good defensive outfielder. And so my favorite thing was hitting 100 fungos and working on the footwork and catching pop-ups. And there was one day I said to him, I'm not trying to quote Field of Dreams or anything, because it was the opposite. I'm the dad in this scenario.
Right.
But I said, man, Carson, I'd love to have one more game of catch. And he's like, let's do it. But it doesn't have to be the last one. Like, you know what I mean? I didn't feel as good after, and I don't think he felt great after.
I'm starting to feel that, too.
Yeah.
I know where you're coming from.
And so that's my encouragement to anybody listening. The house league stuff is awesome. The travel league stuff is awesome. Like, I'm not here beating the drum for different groups and different – but maintain the perspective that a young dad dropping a young kid off, whether that's 8 years old, you and I were joking about like 4U baseball or whatever some of this starts off at, or all the way through college or the Reisdorf family and some of the professionals that are out here and around, you know, what our man's doing for the Detroit Tigers this year and making a, and making a Major League All-Star game. I saw his dad out here the other day. So, like, we're a big enough city. Good ballers come through here. Oh, yeah. But maintain the personal and professional relationships. That stuff's going to come in time. If your son or daughter is good enough in baseball, softball, or whatever other sports, but maintain the perspective, because I was that kid we talked about at the beginning. I had that fear of failure. I don't want to let my dad down. I don't want to let my mom down. I didn't come from any money. Yeah. They're paying to have me at this tournament. I got to get three hits. And it's right. Like, man, this game's hard enough.
Not even just three hits. I got to hit three home runs.
Right. And so you're like, nah, build those kids up, boys and girls. Tell them how much you love them. Because, again, there's a podcast out there about the car ride home. And the kids that dread it. And it's like, because dad was saying, well, what happened here? And we've all gotten into that. I'm not some holier than thou or some hypocrite, but like, just maintain perspective. Because we always talk about this game of failure. Mm-hmm. They start, you got a good sized boy right down there, but they start when they're these little kids. And unfortunately, sometimes with the failure and the pressure, they're out of the game before they've grown into their big boy body.
Absolutely.
And yep. So it's like, no, just build them up and let it all happen in high school and see where it all shakes out from there.
Some great advice, Mr. Mike Nutter. So before we go, so I'm putting a hiatus on this podcast starting next month because it's winter.
Yeah.
Not really a lot going on. So I wanted to make sure to get this in before so that way people can go back and listen to this part. So as this season ends, your season does not end. Your job is not over.
Yeah.
Especially last year, you decided to start a new venture that's here at Parkview.
Seemed like a good idea at the time.
Yeah. So now, I mean, at least from my perspective, look, it was a great time. Yeah. Family had a great time. A lot of people here, but you do the holiday lights here. Parkview Field. So before we go, I definitely want you to promote that because I know you guys are gearing up for that.
Yeah, no doubt. Thank you for that. So last year we did it for the first time, 50 nights. Weren't sure what to expect. We would have guessed 30, 40,000 people maybe. We did 98,000 people. We did 1 million lights. And this year we thought, well, that's not enough. So in 2025 and into the first week of 2026, can't believe we're talking about 26 already, wow. 1.5 million lights. Mm. We're going up 50% in the lights. We're keeping the prices the same. Wow. Folks, you guys, the people listening have supported us beyond our wildest dreams for 17 years with baseball. Give us a shot in the winter, and we can build family memories like we did with your crew and we're going to do with other people that come out here. Now, you got to dress a little differently now. The tank tops and mesh shorts for the Tin Caps game on a lazy Sunday afternoon aren't going to cut it mid-December and stuff. But what we've tried to do is use the power of baseball in this beautiful ballpark to bring our community together. There can be all kinds of drama in politics, sometimes in race relations and different stuff. But inside Parkview Field, we're all Tin Caps, we're all Northeast Indiana, and we're all pulling for the same thing. So we hope we see some people out for some holiday lights.
Absolutely, folks. You heard it right here. Mike Nutter, team president of the Fort Wayne Tin Caps, joining us here. And this will not be the last time, but I definitely wanted to bring him on to, you know, talk about the Tin Caps, you know, kind of recap the 2025 season, which, as he said, hasn't really gone the way that he would probably like or that you would probably like. But we're definitely looking ahead to the holiday light season and the 2026 season here at Parkview Field. Mike, I know I'm going to talk to you a lot more. I know we have our weekly chats on Talking Sports with Jim Shovlin, so this is definitely not going to be the last we talk. I'm sure we're going to bring you on for the holiday lights as well. But I always look forward to our conversations. Always look forward to seeing you. You have great energy. I love it. And I look forward to seeing you and talking to you again.
Thanks, brother. It was great. It was an honor being on with you. I'm give a plug to your sponsor that allows this kind of stuff to happen because it's great for baseball and softball in our area. Indy is the biggest city. I'm a fan of Indy. I'm a fan of all things Indy. But we don't need to have the Indy envy when it comes to baseball, all the way from the kids all the way up to the pro level, because we got a lot to offer here. Every time I'm on with you and my mom texts me right after, DC's the best. I love his energy. And she's listening from Central Florida. So keep doing your thing.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mike. Take care, okay?
Thank you.